First up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, I am delighted to introduce the president and CEO of Food Service University. Welcome to the show, Tom Rector.
Hi, Stone.
Hey, man, we are delighted to have you. We want to learn all about Food Service University, what you guys do, all that stuff. But before we ever go there, let's get a little bit of background, a little bit of context. How in the world does one arrive at this point? Tell us a little bit about your background, man.
Well, my background, I've spent most of my life in food service. I grew up in the restaurant industry and so forth. And after graduating from the business school at The Ohio State University, go Bucks. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I shouldn't talk about that.
You love the BCS, don't you?
Anyway, after graduating, I got involved in several different Fortune 500 companies. And the next 25, 26 years was an executive in sales and marketing with several food service manufacturers, such as Keebler. I was a Keebler elf for about 8 years. And then International Multifoods and Tri-Valley Growers. And around 2000, I found myself in San Francisco. My company that I had been with, Tri-Valley Growers, had just been bought out. And I had a rather nice buyout myself and decided to get involved in some business of my own. Got into supply chain and the tech side of business. It had always been interesting to me. And the food business and the tech side sort of merged when I came to Atlanta for family reasons in 2001 ran into a friend of mine who had just started Food Service University but really had not gotten it totally off of the ground. And I saw the opportunity to merge those two things, the technology and also my understanding of supply chain and the frustrations I had as a sales manager trying to get the message out. So that's sort of how I got involved in e-learning. And since late 2001, I've been involved in that and
so
having some fun.
Food Service University, do you actually refer to it as FSU? Let me tell you why
I
asked.
We like to say FU. That's not often accepted.
Well,
we do.
Yeah.
We do say FSU.
Well, I'm thinking finally an FSU that's competitive, right?
Exactly. Ooh,
no comment over there in the other booth. I interrupted you. So tell us more about the organization. It's an e-learning organization.
Yeah,
what do you guys do for folks?
On the surface, Food Service University appears to be just simply an e-learning company dedicated to the food service channel, and that it is. But peeling back the layers a little bit, we involve ourselves with our clients in really assisting clients in communicating key product message and strategy message out to the distance sales groups that they have. In the food industry, the supply chain is rather broken up. There are distributors, there are dealers, there are brokers and agents.
A lot of fingers in the pie in the food
business. A lot of fingers in the pie. And thus, it's difficult sometimes to translate the brilliance that comes from the boardroom in strategy.
I understand that problem.
To the execution all the way down the line, because there's so many filters involved there. The technology of online learning and broadband itself, as that became more available to the common person, that suddenly opened up the opportunity to create multimedia online learning. We tend to specialize in product-centric learning. In other words, we work with a food manufacturer who needs to introduce his products or do onboarding for new salespeople or train his dealers in the products that they represent.
So you don't create a series of classes that you just hope people around the country sign up for and take e-learning classes. It sounds like you create specific programs for a specific client, or is it both?
Right on. Well, it's not both. We have a little bit of content for onboarding, like Food Service 101 is a program we have for brand new people in the industry that talks about the supply chain and so forth. But generally, our engagement with clients, with manufacturers, is to take their content and collaborate with them and develop an online training program for that particular product group or whatever their particular objective is. So it's all custom work in terms of the content.
But the focus is food service, because it sounds to me what you're describing could just as easily apply to people selling medical equipment or a host of other things, right?
Exactly. Our system, which we'll probably touch on a little bit later, our delivery system, can certainly apply to any company that has a field sales force, very honestly. And we have had some clients outside of the food industry, but my partners and I are both all came from the food industry.
Foodies. You're all foodies.
Foodies. And very honestly, the atmosphere out there, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, so to say, in the food industry. And so we tend to concentrate there because that's where our contacts, our comfort zones are, and so forth. Although from time to time where the opportunity affords itself, we have been able to execute programs with, say, a furniture company, Taco Bell. That's a food company, I realize, but a different element,
a little different
of the
animal
training.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, we had to translate everything into Spanish. That was that was interesting.
Well, e-learning seems to be becoming increasingly popular. I've seen more and more of it. Yet there's still a sector of people out there that don't seem to get into it. What are your thoughts on both those?
Well, first of all, e-learning really has exploded. As I mentioned before, the technology itself has assisted us in our business. When we first started when Ken first started our business, my partner Ken Reynolds, back in 99, most individuals, most companies, in fact, didn't have broadband available to their employees. And so since we tend to train field salespeople who are often working out of their house, they had to use the old dial-up. Everybody remember that?
Stone still uses it, I suspect.
So AOL and all that. And so we had to originally develop our system to be compatible with that. And that was really a challenge to stream graphics. And, of course, there was no video that we could stream on dial-up, but graphics and an audio narration, which was always part of our systems. And so, consequently, as broadband became more available, the e-learning itself really exploded. We use a learning management system. It's actually a technology, a software technology, server-based, to deliver our product. And we have developed that over the years ourselves and constantly tweak it to be state-of-the-art and what's out there. And right now we feel that we do have a state-of-the-art for the food industry, an interactive system that allows user tracking so that managers out in the field know when their people have taken the course, they know how they've scored, and they know where their weak points are so they can concentrate with them on that. And we can handle video, animation. There are some of our programs where we've created animated characters for it, or animated demos, or simulations. And all of our systems really start out very simply in a PowerPoint kind of basis and then sort of grow from there structurally.
Tom, so, what kind of challenge are you finding? So an organization engages you to conduct this e-learning, but then there's a targeted constituency of people intended to benefit from that learning. Are you guys or both getting resistance, saying, I don't want to learn this way, I want to go back to what I used to know, which is workbooks and paper? I mean, Stone and I have an engagement with a client, which encompasses in large part e-learning for a large sales force, and we're just it's a constant battle to keep them motivated to be engaged in that. But are you seeing those kind of challenges, and if so, how are you combating that?
That's absolutely one of the challenges that we have. When we create an engagement, it's very important for us to explore what the management of the company feels, how they feel about an e-learning engagement. We really have to have support all the way to the top, and it has to be it has to be something that's required of the people, or else you're really going to have a lot of challenges getting it executed. To your point, Todd, once we understand the commitment to the training, Yes, there are always, I'll say old dogs. I'm an old dog, too. There's always the old dogs out there in the field who don't really want to engage this way. But very honestly, companies have moved along. And, you know, if they're still on the sales team, most often, you know, they've had to get involved in email. They've had to get involved in some of the high-tech communications devices that are out there. And online training is, you know, just one of those things. Our system is just simple as anything to use. If you've ever gone to a website, then you can use our system.
Did you have the ability to require people to participate? I mean, is the learning that your organizations provide typically voluntary? Is if you want to get better at what you do, take advantage of e-learning, or is it a situation where you're required to participate and there's ways to kind of track who's participating, how they do, how they're progressing along, or is it a combination of both?
It tends to be more of a requirement. How strong that requirement is varies from client to client, as I mentioned before. But because we can push the training out to individuals via email links and so forth, and we can track whether or not they did it, it sort of gives us the 360 degrees of ability to sort of force the issue, if you will. I'm sitting here thinking I've had maybe a client or two where it was totally voluntary. And, of course, you have the 20-80 rule. 20% of them use it, and 80% of them say, I don't know.
And if I had to guess, the 20 best salespeople in a sales force are probably the ones that participated.
Gee, what would bring you to that idea? Exactly. So, you know, consequently, the real effort behind it is not only creating the system, but then doing the follow-through. And this is part of what we advise clients on. How do you properly implement this and follow this through? You need the field salespeople who are out there supervising those salespeople. They need to be on board, too, because if they're asking about this training, it'll get done. You know, I had a manager once who said, a salesperson will respect what I inspect.
Well, I'll tell you what, a sales manager, if you don't have them involved in the process, a sales manager will untrain them quicker than you can train them.
No kidding.
So if I'm VP of sales for Schnick Foods, what factors should I be considering? What questions should I be asking of you and of myself as I'm entertaining the idea of engaging you guys?
If you work for Schnick Foods, I'd be polishing my resume. No, but seriously, if you're a sales manager, you know, one of the challenges that's out there right now, and this is happening not only in the food industry, but a lot of industries. Back when I was supervising in the field, say in the 80s or even gone all the way back into the 70s, I would typically have 15 to 18 regional managers working with the brokers and the distributors out in the 50 or so markets. Today, the average is more like 7.
Wow. Hmm.
So those region managers have a reach now that is massive. They have, you know, some of them have 8 or 9 states. And within each state, there may be 2 or 3 markets. So they're obviously, those field managers really cannot carry the message out to the dealers and distributors who are representing their product out in the field. It's just not physically possible to have a lot of face time with those individuals. And so consequently, that's where e-learning comes into play. The early parts of learning were CD-ROMs. And there's great ones out there. And you're smiling. You remember the old CD-ROM.
Yeah,
you get
I'm old
them
enough
mail.
To remember exactly what you're talking
you
about.
You get them in the mail.
And playing records.
You get them in the mail, and you'd be required to put that in your laptop that was provided to you or your computer that was provided to you, and it was training. But there was no way to tell if the individual actually took the training. Oh, yeah, I took the training. So having an interactive online element where there's tracking is the next level, the next logical
level. Well, that tracking and accountability,
level.
that's got to mean a lot.
Absolutely. That's one of our strengths in our selling process. There's still a lot of companies using CD-ROMs or things like the CD-ROM that do not have tracking associated with it. And, you know, as a sales manager, as a headquarters person, you might think, oh, I know my people are doing this, but how many of us have been out working with a salesman and he opens up the trunk and there's, you know, the last 6 months worth of crap that you sent him still in the box in his trunk, right? I know it's happened to me.
Well, you made the point that e-learning is exploding, and I agree with you 100%, but there's still a lot of organizations out there that are still using archaic means of training, and quite frankly, before long, they're going to be at a competitive disadvantage.
Right. Yes, exactly. You know, the you have a couple of challenges out there. The turnover out there at the field level, at the lowest level of field level, like the agents and distributors, is quite high. So you could have a big sales meeting and have this big kickoff, but 3 weeks later, maybe 20% of the sales force isn't there anymore, and it's all new guys going, what do I do?
Well, and there's certainly no shortage of food service organizations struggling with these challenges.
Yeah.
They need to at least engage in a conversation with you guys.
Absolutely.
What's the best way for them to get in touch with you and learn more about your services?
Well, the easiest way to remember is foodserviceu.com. All of our contact information is on there, foodserviceu.com. I'm not going to burden anybody with phone numbers, emails, et cetera, although my email is trector, R-E-C-T-O-R, at foodserviceu.com. But all of our contact information and our connections to Twitter and my blog and all the other things that we do out there, foodservice.com.
Perfect. Well, listen, before we let you go, Tom, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We'd like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Absolutely. Regrets, I've had a few. And in thinking about this question, I know a lot of your, or I suspect a lot of your audience is involved in, you know, contract work and freelance and things of this type. And we learned the hard way when we first started. We, our contracts and our agreements focused on the basic deliverables and so forth. But we didn't have it screwed all the way down. And one of the challenges and one of the big mistakes we had, we were with a large client who constantly would change the content, and we went into revisions, we literally 20 or 25 revisions. Well, that drives our costs absolutely out above the roof, and we ended up losing $6,000 on that deal because we couldn't go back to them to charge them for the extra expense. What did I learn? I learned to have someone help me write a contract with a statement of work in there. So now we're protected. If it goes beyond, we're very specific about what we'll deliver, and if it goes beyond the number of hours, we charge them.
So if you're going to work with Tom and his team, you're
That's
not
right.
going to write about it on the back of a cocktail napkin. We're going to do the real deal, right?
Absolutely.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this morning. I got to tell you, I've still got a ton of questions about what you do. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
Absolutely. I'm available for drinks as well.
Well, we're good at
now
that.
Now you're talking.
No, I'd love to come back.